Hello and welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Josh Norris, and this is Ben Badler in Boston this morning. We're going to talk to you about prospects, like we always do. Say hello, Ben.
Hey, what's going on, Josh?
So, what did you want to talk about this morning? I think the forefront of every baseball fan's minds who have been paying attention over the last 24 hours is that massive slugger in Texas named Joey Gallo, who debuted with quite a bang last night. What'd you think?
Yeah, who else does everybody want to talk about right now but Joey Gallo? It's not – I don't think it's – it's everybody seemed really surprised that he was getting called up, but I don't know that he's necessarily I think there's still a lot more for him that he could learn in the minor leagues to use for his development. I don't think he's going to be up here for much more than a couple of weeks while Adrian Beltre is getting healthy and gets off the disabled list. But this is what the Rangers do. They're a very aggressive organization. They like to push their guys. I mean, you saw it with Odor last year, and
how about
Michael De Leon going to Double A as a 17-year-old? They always push their guys.
They upped the ante last night. Yasin Yurizarry is at Triple A.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they like to get these guys moving. So it's and usually when they do it, the guys are able to handle it. Whether it's even going back to guys like Jurickson Profar or Martin Perez, the way they push them very aggressively, but they were able to handle those assignments. But yeah, if they need somebody to come up and fill in, it gives them a little bit of a taste of what more advanced pitching is like. I mean, there's Chris Sale and Carlos Rodon. I mean, Joey Gallo's, unless he sits in the lineup, he's probably going to face these guys. There's nobody he's going to face, especially as a left-handed hitter, that's going to give him more problems or better stuff than these kind of guys. So, getting exposure, even if it's just for a couple of weeks, to this kind of pitching can probably help his development. But yeah, I mean, last night we saw what happens if you make a mistake to Joey Gallo. He's going to hit a ball 440 plus feet.
And he's going to put you on the highlights. That was the baseball version of being posterized.
Yeah. Now the next game is just as likely to, go 0-for-4 with 3 punchouts, but any mistake that's in his zone, he's just going to crush. And he's not, I don't want to make it sound like he's just a mistake hitter, because that's not what he is. That was what he was a couple of years ago, when he was in Hickory and striking out almost 170 or so times in a little over 100 games, and there were a lot of questions about how that was going to translate going forward. But he took a big step forward last year, really cut down on a lot of that excess movement, got a better understanding of how pitchers were going to pitch to him. I mean, this is not a guy who's just up there completely hacking. He's got some type of a plan at the plate. He's got pitch. We talk about plate discipline and pitch recognition, but he's got some pitch anticipation too. I think he understands how pitchers are going to attack him. Not necessarily major league pitchers right now. He hasn't seen that yet. He hasn't quite seen the level of stuff and feel for location that major league pitchers have that you're just not going to find in Double A. But this is a guy who's gonna strike out a lot, but he's gonna draw a ton of walks. Pitchers are gonna pitch to him very carefully. Once he figures out the major league game and adjusts to the speed of that game, so he's gonna draw a ton of walks and obviously hit be a threat to hit 35, 40, maybe 40 plus home runs a year. So yeah, this is I don't know how long he's gonna be up. I think in the future this guy's gonna be. Obviously, I think he's got a very good chance to lead the league in home runs or slugging. But I'll be very interested to see how he's able to adapt and how the league is able to – how quickly the league is able to get a book on him, even if it's just a brief stint in Texas right now.
I don't think it's too early to get a campaign started to get Joey Gallo to the Home Run Derby in Cincinnati. For the All-Star game.
So, yeah, I don't think anyone would mind that.
No, if you could get him and Bryant and Harper and have a Vegas home run derby in Cincinnati, It would be amazing.
I think, and everyone always sleeps on Chris Carter too. I'm not saying he's he's in that category as a as an overall player, but just in terms of Vegas raw power hitters, I mean, the guy had 37 home runs last year, and he's almost like an afterthought in the Vegas power group. But
well, he's not Bryce Harper, and he's not new and shiny like Gallo and Brian.
Right. Well, and all those guys are born what one or 2 years apart, and all.
We've all seen the picture of Harper and Gallo playing on the same little league team.
Right, right. Did you ever play a little league team like that?
Well, when you are 5'2", maybe 5 foot at the time, and 110 pounds soaking wet, everyone's Joey Gallo.
Yeah.
They're all Gallo. So no, I didn't. So it's not just Joey Gallo on their farm. They've got some other guys who are doing some damage, obviously. You are particularly fond of the AA Round Rock Club that features a lot of same guys that J.J. Cooper profiled from the 2013 Hickory Club. Nick Williams is there. Nomar Mazara is there. Jorge Alfaro is there. There's a few more that I'm probably missing. Jake Thompson, I believe, is there. The club that Gallo just left. So we obviously, I think internally we're highest on Mazara out of that group, if I'm correct. And I think there's a good reason for it, just because he's a very left-handed hitter with a very sweet swing who's starting to break out a little bit this year, and he's still very young for the league. I mean, what do you think about Mazara, Ben?
Yeah, it's really impressive to me the adjustments that he's been able to make since he signed, because when he signed, he played in this program that's run by a trainer named Yvonne Noboa. And he's had a lot of the top, certainly a lot of the top players who signed for top bonuses over the years in the Dominican Republic. And obviously Mazara still has the record for the highest international amateur bonus at $495 million. And it was, it was a package deal too. They got a couple other players out of it too, and threw some more money their way. But Mazara played in this very controlled environment. Everybody was saying, we would see him, but he wouldn't necessarily come to our complex. They would make us go to his field, which is a very small bandbox type of park. So he would, he did have big raw power, but it looked even better there, just because it was this very small park. He's hitting balls into the trees. It's very pretty to see that. And the biggest thing was that, he wouldn't really play in game situations. You couldn't see him face live pitching all that much. There were teams that did see him face live pitching, and when he did, there was a lot of swing and miss. There was a lot of strikeouts, and that was a big concern for a lot of teams. He had this big swinging leg kick that really disrupted his timing, and that works in batting practice when the guy is. The guy throwing it to you is just going to put it right into your kill zone so you could put on a nice show in BP. But when the fastballs start getting a little faster and the pitcher starts to wiggle and bends, it's not so easy to be on time. And when Mazara came out that first year in the Arizona League, I think he showed surprising patience. I don't think people – it's hard to get a read on any young amateur hitter, especially in when you're scouting them in the Dominican Republic, but especially when you're not seeing them in a lot of game at bats, it's hard to gauge plate discipline and patience, pitch recognition, things like that. So he showed some patience and he definitely showed power, but that again, there was a lot of swing and miss. He went to Hickory the next year. He had 236 and. He was all right. He kind of held his own there for a young kid in that league, but he had to repeat the league and last year, and that's when he really, as the season went along, he kind of toned down his swing, was able to make the right adjustments and cut down some of that unnecessary movement that was going on in his swing, and you really saw him break out. He went to winter ball. Tore it up there in the Dominican League last this past winter, and then he's just kind of carried that over this year in Frisco. So you're seeing a much more refined hitter, a much more polished overall player than he was a few years ago. And he's really raw in the outfield. He had an average arm at best when he signed. Now it's an above average arm. He's become a much better outfielder, a much better hitter, and it's interesting because I think he only has 3 home runs this year, so the power hasn't been showing up in games so much this year. But I don't think anybody's concerned about that. This is an enormous human with plus raw power. So as he continues to mature as a hitter and find that right blend between being able to put the ball in play and being able to drive it for power in game situations, I think you're gonna see him really take off.
Yeah, and then I agree there. I mean, he's loaded with potential, just like all the other guys in this. Well, not all the other guys, but a lot of the other guys in this club. We talked about Nick Williams, who's got some of the fastest hands in the minor leagues, and just like a lot of guys in the Rangers system, is just a toolbox with stuff he can do. He can hit. He can hit for power. He can play the outfield. And this year, it's starting to show up. He's got an 818 OPS at AA. He's got 7 home runs, which is impressive because his career high for a full season is 17. So he's on track to get near that again.
I love Nick Williams. I love what he's done this year, and I give a lot of credit to the players, obviously themselves, for making the right adjustments, but to it seems like the Rangers have a lot of hitters who have been able to cut down on their strikeouts. And you mentioned that Hickory Club a couple of years ago. It was just kind of always amusing to see that lineup, because what would you see? You'd see guys with a ton of tools and a ton of strikeouts. Exciting players on that team, but they also swung and missed a ton. And usually if you're swinging and missing a lot in low A, that's a pretty big red flag for all the pretty significant adjustments you're going to have to be able to make to hit major league pitching. And most guys aren't able to do it. And, granted, these guys aren't hitting in the major leagues quite yet, but the improvement that guys like Joey Gallo and Nomar Mazara and Jorge Alfaro and Nick Williams have made since then, it has been very impressive to me. I mean, Nick Williams is a guy who, you mentioned his hand speed. It's outstanding hand speed. It's a lightning quick bat, and it's for a guy who, you look at the strikeouts that he had and the very low walk rate. But every time I talk to a scout about him, they just refer to him as they just love his natural hitting actions. And he always has hit close to 300 for his career. But obviously in his case, there were pitch recognition issues. There were approach issues. He was up there swinging at everything. I mean, he looked, and I wrote this in his report. If this guy hits his ceiling, he could be basically their version of Carlos Gonzalez. But if he never figures out how to actually manage his at-bats and work the count and wait for a good pitch to hit, he looks a lot like Felix PA, too, who was obviously a very highly touted prospect who was never able to put it all together, in large part because of his approach issues. But, what we've seen from Nick Williams this year, he has 22 walks this year already through 51 games, which is already exactly equal to the number of walks that he had a year ago for the entire season. And, I don't think it's just, it's a small sample size and, he's still up there just hacking away. This is real improvement from him. I think he realizes that, sometimes you learn by swinging at bad pitches. Okay, if I swing at that slider off the dirt, I can't really hit that pitch. Or if I'm up there swinging at the first pitch at a borderline pitch and I'm just kind of rolling it over for a ground ball, that's really not the optimal approach. I'm not getting base hits by that. So, I need to learn to lay off that pitch. And some guys never do learn it. Obviously, you want to have the guy who has, you know, that natural recognition of the pitch out of a guy's hand and comes into pro ball with that. But, you know, some guys, Starling Marte was like that. He had to learn that coming up. And I think Nick Williams is – you're starting to see that click for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's about right. I think you pretty much covered it there, Ben. It's a really good club there at Double A Frisco, even with Gallo gone. And it's impressive because at that Hickory club, it seemed like they didn't – I don't want to say they didn't care about the strikeouts, but it wasn't a big worry. It was let these guys, you know, rip and do what they can, and then we'll install a two-strike approach later. And it seems to have worked for a majority of the guys, to the Rangers' credit. So you have to give them big kudos for that. Let's move on from the Rangers a little bit and talking about a guy who did move up. That's Yankees right-hander Luis Severino, who was promoted about a week ago from AA to AAA and made his first AAA start the other day to kind of middling results, kind of had a few command issues. But, you know, you and I both have followed Severino's career pretty closely. I cover the Yankees for the Handbook, and you're obviously the international guru of international gurus. So were you surprised when he got moved so early?
No, and it's weird. I got a bunch of questions, too, from people. I get so many questions from fans and people who want to know, oh, why hasn't this guy been promoted yet from low A to high A? Like, that's like a month into the season, as if, you know, that's – it really matters whether what level of A ball a player is at or whether a guy's moving from high A to double A. So I was very surprised when I got a bunch of questions saying, oh, why are the Yankees moving Luis Severino so fast? But
I got the same thing.
It's, you know, I'm not sure what there is that he needs to do in double A. I mean, this guy has, you know, he's striking guys out. He's throwing a bunch of strikes. He's been in double A. I think he had almost 15 starts in double A between this year and last year. So, you know, I saw him pitch, you know, earlier this season, and he didn't even have his best stuff that day. I think his didn't really have great feel for his changeup, which is obviously his well, I can't say his best pitch because he was sitting with his fastball 94 to 96 and was up to 97, and he's been up even higher than that at times in the past. But even his changeup wasn't even on that day. His slider kind of came and went. You could tell he didn't even just talk to him. But he said he didn't have the best feel for his off-speed stuff that day. It still gets around the slider sometimes. But even without his best stuff, he was still, you know, overpowering that level. And I think he's definitely ready for that Triple A challenge right now. And I think he's got a good chance to. I think he's got a good chance to be able to help them in the big leagues this year. I really do. I mean, I think if you have – you look at the injury rate of pitchers around baseball, and I think if a guy can throw strikes and is having success, you know, I'm all for pushing him up the ladder. I think it's the right move.
Yeah, he reminds me a little bit of Jose Ramirez in that system, both in stuff – and build. He's a little thicker than Jose, and he's performed a little better, but they moved him uber quick from double A to triple A, to the surprise of a lot of people. And he seems to be following the similar path. Obviously, I think they're going to keep him a starter as long as can be, and probably long term. I think he's a guy who could probably help them, assuming he succeeds in triple A the way he succeeded in double A, around the All-Star break. Maybe earlier, maybe a little after the All-Star break, in July at some point. Especially if you think about that rotation, you're going to have Tanaka, who is obviously continuing to walk that high wire of health. We'll see how he fares. I think he's today against Taiwan Walker, so we'll see. You're going to have Nova coming back at some point around the All-Star break, probably. You're going to have Pineda, and if you get Severino in there, you might give yourself a big boost, and especially since these guys are contending in a very, very mediocre AL East right now. I mean, they're three games above 500, I think, and are a half game up in the division. So a guy like that, if he can come up and provide something similar to what he's done in the minor leagues, that could go a huge way in a division race.
Yeah, I don't know that he's ready right now, but like you said, by the All-Star, whether it's the All-Star break or August, I think at some point this year, I would like to see more development with the slider. I think that would be the one pitch. It's interesting too, because when the reason they signed him was they liked his fastball and they liked his slider. And in pro ball, he's become this fastball, mid-90s fastball plus or better changeup guy. And the slider, I think it has its moments. If there are times it can be a swing and miss pitch for him, it's just not a consistent pitch. He's still learning to stay on top of it and not get around the ball. But to me, that would be the biggest development goal for him right now in AAA. It's not so much being able to repeat his delivery or throw more strikes. I mean, I think he's an excellent strike thrower. He throws plenty of strikes. He's got three pitches. He's definitely a starter. But I would like to see him just bring along that breaking ball a little bit more. But yeah, at some point this season, like you said, he should be able to give that rotation a boost.
Absolutely. So we agree that his promotion is not too aggressive. Let's move on and talk about some stuff that I saw over this past weekend. When I was in Tennessee from Thursday until yesterday, and in that time, if you listen to the last podcast, you know I saw the Cubs Double A team, the Twins Double A team, the Brewers Double A team, Triple A Las Vegas, and I think I'm probably missing somebody in there, but that means I saw Buxton, Sano, Polanco, Berrios. Oh, the Diamondbacks Double A team, Braden Shipley, Brandon Drury, Kyle Schwarber, Corey Black, and Steven Matz, and Orlando Arcia, among others. So we can start there. I wrote about Arcia today on the site, or yesterday, I guess it went up on the site, and he was really, really impressive. I know you're super high on him. What do you think about him coming into the year?
Yeah, I mean, I love everything about the guy. It's a very aggressive swing. I mean, I think you just look at the numbers that he produces, and you think he'd have this, small, simple type swing because he puts the ball in play a lot, and there's not a lot of power. But he's up there, and he takes a very aggressive hack, but he has the hand-eye coordination to make it work. He covers the plate. He puts the ball in play, hits to all fields. And, it's not a ton of power, but I don't think he needs to have a ton of power to be a shortstop. I think he hits the ball hard enough. There's enough pop in his bat, and he's going to be able to hit, get on base, be a potential, whether it's leadoff or number two hitter, somewhere in the top of the order, and then play above average defense at shortstop. And he's grown into, he wasn't really much of a runner when the Brewers signed him, but he's now an above average runner. So this is a really, really well-rounded player. And I think he's starting to get more attention. It's not like he was off the radar or anything by any means last year, but I think he's really, really moved himself into the discussion among the top handful of shortstop prospects in the minors right now.
Absolutely. I mean, he's the second youngest player in that league, only to Billy McKinney. At 20 years and change right now. And he's the reigning Southern League Player of the Week. He had five doubles and a bomb last week. And if you go to BA, you could see, I think, three or four of those doubles on our video of him from the week for the three or four games I saw him, or two or three games I saw him. He's interesting. I think there's more power than I would have expected from him. Especially in BP, you could see him going opposite field with a lot of power, too. And it showed up in games, too, especially on one of those doubles that he kind of had a fastball kind of middle out, and he smacked it up against the wall on one or two bounces. And then there was one against J.O. Berrios where he knew a fastball was coming, and he ambushed it and nearly hit it out to left field. I think it is a home run if the wall's not huge. So there's sock in that bat. The only area I almost I worry a little bit about, and I mentioned it in this piece, is that pitchers are attacking him away. And I think he looked a little vulnerable away with off-speed stuff. He looked like he would kind of commit a little early, and then you'd result in either a weak contact or a miss, a swing and miss entirely. So there's a little bit of work to do there, but just the tools are incredible. You're right on that he's an above-average defender with an above-average throwing arm. He could play defense in the major leagues right now, I think, and it's something that he said he's worked a lot on to become better at. But it's tantalizing. I think he's the top prospect in the Brewers system without question.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you saw him and Jorge Polanco from the Twins, right?
Yep.
I mean, there's another guy too who I just think is certainly Arcia came into the year with a higher profile, certainly higher ranked than Polanco.
Well, one of them is a major leaguer already.
Right, for a very brief time, but just sort of an emergency. Oh, you're on the 40 man. We don't have anyone else. let's see what you can do for a little bit. Type deal with Polanco, obviously, but yeah, Polanco. You know, I just think he's a very underrated player. There's nothing flashy about him. I think he's a very solid all-around player who can play, whether it's shortstop or second base, he's going to play somewhere in the middle of the infield, and he's just a good hitter. I think I think he's one of those guys who the more you see, the more you appreciate, because I like his bat. I mean, I think he's going to hit. I think he's going to be an above average hitter in the major leagues and play in the middle of the diamond somewhere. Now it's not going to be a ton of power, but it's going to be, again, like RC, it's going to be enough power for him to play every day in the middle of the infield and be, you know, an above average hitter. And when you can do that and play in the middle of the diamond, you put that all together, it's an above average player potentially. So but you were able to see both of them, and what did you come away thinking between Arcia and Polanco?
I think I liked Arcia a little better, but Polanco is certainly very good. He still makes some mistakes, I think, from aggressiveness. There's a moment on the bases. He got thrown out trying to steal, and I thought maybe he wasn't supposed to steal in that situation. It was just he got caught pretty easy by whoever the catcher was.
Yeah, he's not a good base runner. That definitely is the area he's got to work on a lot.
But he made a lot of contact, and he showed enough power to put the balls in the gaps. In that first game, I think he was like three for four or four for five. He made contact, put the balls in the gap with authority. Can play shortstop. They're both talented. It's if you like Arcia, it's because he shows a little more control to his game. But they're both stud prospects, I think. And that I made the comparison that watching Biloxi versus Chattanooga versus anybody really is like watching a fall league game in June. There's just so many prospects on the field at one time. If you're watching Chattanooga, you're seeing Byron Buxton, you're seeing Miguel Sano, you're seeing Polanco, Travis Harrison, Adam Brett Walker, Stuart Turner, Jose Berrios, Jake Reed, JT Chargois with 100-mile-an-hour fastball, Nick Birdie's on that team is stacked from, you know, starter to lineup to bullpen. And then you throw in Orlando Arcia and Michael Reed, who's leading the Southern League, I believe, in OPS at 949 on the Biloxi team and gets no press at all. And Tyrone Taylor, the guy we ranked number one in the Brewers system coming into the year, is on that team. Tyler Wagner was on that team, but got promoted before to the major leagues. Good for him. Congratulations. Before I got to see him. Jorge Lopez, another prospect of theirs, was on that team. So that league is stacked, but those two teams together is like watching the Arizona Fall League in June with a lot more humidity.
Yeah, what you mentioned Buxton. What did you think of him?
I mean, he's obviously a stud. I mean, he's tooled up from here to Chattanooga. He didn't do much in that series, but you could see flashes every so often. I shouldn't say in the series, in the games that I watched. When I did leave, he did stuff. he had a couple singles when I watched, but you can see he's quick. He's got silly raw power and BP. He makes all sorts of great catches in the outfield. He robbed Anthony Giansante of at least a double, probably a triple. I did see him swing a lot and miss a lot at off-speed pitches, which wasn't concerning, but it's just something to note. At this point, he does have a wart. He's the number one prospect still in the minors, but you know he's not ready yet. I wouldn't be bringing him up to replace Aaron Hicks right now. What do you have to add to that? I mean, I know you love Buxton just as much as everybody else here does.
Yeah, no, I think defensively he certainly could play in the big leagues right now, but offensively there's still, like you said, there's still some work to be done. I think ultimately this is a guy who could hit, whether you want to hit him leadoff or you could hit him in the middle of the lineup. I guess I'm not that passionate about where a guy has to hit in the lineup, but I think he's going to be able to hit for average. You're right. There is some swing and miss, not problematically, but it's not like he's I don't project him as a 320 hitter or anything like that. Somebody's going to have an elite type of contact rate, but I think he's going to be a plus hitter because of the bats and the speed that he brings to the table. It's going to help him leg out infield hits. It's going to help him turn singles into doubles into triples. I think he has 11
triples.
Yeah.
At one point, I tweeted that he had 24% of his hits were triples at one point.
Yeah, and he has a pretty good idea of what he's doing at the plate in terms of his approach. So yeah, you're right. It's not this is not a guy I would think would be up this year.
I didn't think Joey Gallo would be up this early. So.
Yeah, I mean the Twins are a much more conservative organization. Certainly, if the Rangers are aggressive, the Twins are definitely on the opposite end of that spectrum. But then again, the Twins are in first place in the American League Central, and it's June 3rd, and I can't believe I'm saying that because I thought this was going to be the worst team in that league fairly easily. I'm not quite sure how they're doing it. I don't know how sustainable it is, but those wins they have are in the bank, and I can't rule them out from being a contender at some point. If July 31st, if the trade deadline rolls around, this team might actually be a buyer at the trade deadline, and they might call up guys who you wouldn't have expected. And they, if they need to go out and use the farm system to help the major league club in a trade, they certainly have the talent in the minor leagues to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. They have, if they're buyers at the trade deadline, even without Sano and Buxton on the table, they have plenty of chips. I mean, just we talked about the Chattanooga team, but elsewhere they have Alex Meyer. If you want to sell someone, he's a power bullpen arm. They have Cole Stewart at lower levels. My helium guy, Chi-Wei Hu, is making a lot of noise in the Florida State League and fared pretty well for himself in one spot start in AAA. I'm sure I'm missing somebody, but they've got pieces up and down without touching their prized assets.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Polanco. They've got, Nick Gordon. They got a lot of guys in that farm system who would be very, I think, very attractive trade chips. Even down at the lower levels of the system, they got some pretty interesting young Latin players who they could use as kind of add-ons as that, third or fourth piece in a trade if it comes down to that. So yeah, they've got a lot of options. And yeah, you mentioned Alex Meyer. It's the control has been problematic this year. I think if they need to call up somebody this year, I think Tyler Duffy is a guy who is a sleeper for them. He's he did rank it, I think he was number 15 or 16 for them this year. Number 16 for them in the prospect handbook. But this is a guy who's never gotten a ton of attention until last year, and that's because last year his stuff really just jumped up. He was throwing, you know, maybe up to 93 or so, and then his stuff jumped. I saw him last year up to 96 as a guy who, you know, throws a lot of strikes, who keeps the ball on the ground, and he's got a starter's mix. He's got a good changeup. He's got a good breaking ball. It just kind of took a little bit longer for things to click for him coming out of college, but it's this is a guy who has I think he's got a chance to be, you know, not a high upside guy, but a chance to be a back of the rotation starter, a guy who could help them this year if they want to bring him up.
Yeah, absolutely. They have an excellent system, and it's going to be able to help them, whether it's in trades or whether it's just reinforcements down the stretch. If they do somehow maintain this, I mean, I don't think they will. I think that's the Royals division or the Tigers division for the taking. Who do you think is more surprising at this point, the Twins or the Astros?
That's a good question. I think can I just answer yes?
No, because this is hot seat, Ben. You're on the hot seat.
I'm very shocked by both of them. I think the Astros, I expected to be, you know, and for both teams, I expected them to be contending either next year or the year after that. I mean, these are both teams with good farm systems and good young talent in the organization, whether it's at the big league level now, especially in Houston or in the minor leagues. But I just didn't expect either of them to be this good so far.
Yeah, I think that it would be the Twins would be the most surprising, because the Astros, their big pieces of their farm system were closer. McCullers was, I guess, on the edge of a call-up and got it. Preston Tucker was closer. If you believe Jonathan Singleton is ready again, he's closer. He's at AAA. I didn't think Correa would be on the verge of a call-up this early, but it sure seems like he is. Whereas Buxton and Sano are obviously coming off mostly lost years, so they wouldn't probably be able to help. So I think the Twins are a little more surprising than the Astros.
Yeah, but one player the Twins are definitely not going to trade, I think it's fair to say, is Miguel Sano. And I love the picture.
The movie star, Miguel Sano?
Yeah, I love the picture you posted the other day on our Facebook page of him and Buxton and Polanco, because Polanco, it's not like he's a, you know, like a slim guy by any means, but you could just see with Sano standing next to him and then standing next to Buxton, who's all – Buxton's what, 6'2", 190 or so?
Something like that.
And Sano is just towering.
No, Sano is a monster. He's a big boy.
Yeah, just an enormous, enormous human being, and hit an enormous home run in the video you posted and that you saw. I mean, what were your impressions of him from watching him this past week?
I mean, there's still some rust to be kicked off, but man, is his power stupid. That video that I posted, if you can find the baseball in that video, kudos to you, because it was long gone, probably before I turned my camera toward the left field scoreboard, and then it was in the sun. But he hit some balls like that in BP that are still – he and Adam Brett Walker during BP was just bomb after bomb after bomb. If you're on that highway outside of AT&T Field, you're very thankful there's a net up, because otherwise you're calling your insurance adjuster to claim act of God, and really it's just an act of Sano. He's incredible. I've heard that his lateral movement at third base isn't great. He did show one play that I'm sure you'll see on BA at some point, where he was able to come in on the ball and one-hand it and make a strong throw to first, which is encouraging. It wasn't quite the A-Rod play where you get it off the ground. It was off a high bounce. But he does have that plus arm. And even if he has to move to first base somehow at some point, he's going to have the power and the hitting chops to stick there. Yet you're not touching him in a trade, I don't think. Although my mantra is everybody can be traded. It's just a matter of for whom. I don't believe in untouchables, so that's a small digression.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. There's just sort of a with him. I can't imagine a practical scenario where he's able to where a team is able to trade for him. But I guess look, on the other hand, we've seen.
I didn't believe Addison Russell could be traded.
Yeah, Addison Russell, Will Myers, Jesus Montero was at one point one of the, an even higher ranked prospect than Miguel Sano. So we have seen guys like that moved. Yeah, like, but
that Pineda Montero trade, that was a fascinating challenge trade, and I would love to see more like that. That, you know, people on the internet are going to churn out immediate who won the trades, and it's not going to be. There's not going to be a clear winner until 2 or 3 years down the line. Those trades are fascinating, and Sano would be a kind of guy that could be moved in one of those, but it's probably not going to happen. But it's kind of fun to think
about.
Yeah,
it's I'm looking at Sano. I mean, they list him at 260 pounds now, which sounds accurate, and also sounds like I don't know how many 260-pound, 6'4", 260-pound third baseman there have ever been. I remember when Sano signed, first he was trying out at shortstop. Nobody thought this guy was going to be a shortstop, but he was running, if I remember right, he's running like 6'7". I mean, he could run. He had some speed at the time. He was athletic. Obviously he still has a strong arm. It sounds like even coming off the surgery now. Everybody just assumed this guy would go to third base, right field, maybe first base, just depending on how the body developed, just because everybody thought, this guy's going to blow up and be a huge person. And that's been correct. And I don't know, has he lost his athleticism, or do you think the athleticism is still there to play third base? Or, I mean, it's just, you don't see anybody who's 260 pounds.
Well,
the exception of maybe Pablo Sandoval, but even he's
and one
not.
More,
Juan
Uribe.
Yeah,
he's listed as 6'2", 245, I think, which is
So I mean, you can get away with some different shapes at the position, but you have to be an excellent athlete for your size, have quick reactions and hand-eye coordination and arm strength to play the position. I don't know. It's always hard for me to judge a guy defensively after just seeing him a few games. What were your impressions of him in the field?
He's okay there. Like I said, the lateral range isn't great. The arm is strong. But something someone was mentioning to me was that he doesn't know right now the finer points of playing third base, like when to play in, when to play back, when to read a guy's swing better. And that's the kind of stuff that's not going to show up in a box score or a video, for that matter, that he still needs to learn, even if he had a fielding percentage of 1,000. That's that kind of stuff. It's going to take a little longer for him to learn to see whether the final verdict is that he can stay at third. You heard a lot of things about Michael Franco, whether he could stick at third. And I think he can. He's not the most fleet of foot guy in the world, but he's got great instincts over there, Michael. And he's got a strong arm to make up for some of that lack of lateral range. So they're working very hard with him on agility. There's a video on our Facebook page and our Instagram of him. There's a coach who will just take a ball and he'll stand like square from the coach, and the coach will at random throw a ball to his left and his right and his left and his right. And it's kind of, and Miguel has to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and catch them, and then immediately toss them back and get ready again. It's kind of like juggling, but your the ball flight is controlled by somebody else's hand. And he does okay with it. There's some times where he misses and then has to take a few breaths because he's winded. But they're working very hard on it, and I think it's a long way off before saying you have to move.
All right.
So what else did you want to talk about on this podcast, Ben?
You said you saw who else did you see on the trip?
Schwarber, the catcher for the Cubs, who is a catcher right now, may not be that in the future. If you read it in JJ Cooper's piece earlier this year about the Cubs and their catchers and defensive catching overall. You know that they've revamped a lot of stuff with Kyle Schwarber. He talked about, you know, positioning himself differently on parts of his feet. Like he said, they're thinking of setting him up more toward the middle of his feet now, if I remember correctly. They've changed his throwing stroke. He's working very hard on it. But it's not a shame, but it's his bat is ready now or soon. He could slot right into that lineup, but because the Cubs are a National League team, you're not going to play him at first base because Anthony Rizzo lives there. I don't think you're necessarily going to put him in the outfield yet. I guess left field would be the most likely landing spot for him if you're not going to put him at catcher. But that's another piece that could slot right into this lineup with Bryant and Rizzo and Russell and Castro, and I'm sure I'm missing somebody else in that Cubs lineup. But it's another piece that is going to be a potential impact bat for them. Just not necessarily. If he were with an AL team, he might be up right now DHing.
Yeah, I think they're genuine about their commitment to having him catch. Now he's not ready to catch in the big leagues right now. I think if you, especially if you teamed him with a battery of him and John Lester, pretty much anybody who gets on first base is going to be automatically at second.
Yeah.
So he's not good at throwing out runners. His lateral agility is not that great. In terms of just, you know, receiving and framing pitches, it sounds like he's pretty solid at that. But a lot of there's still a lot of work to be done behind the plate. And I think if you give him, if you give him 2-3 years in the minor league, something like that, to figure it out, he might be, I think he would be a passable catcher, but this is not a bat that's going to need 2 to 3 years in the minor leagues to be ready. He probably is not even going to need another year in the minor leagues. I don't know. I'm not as optimistic, and I love Kyle Schwarber, ever since ever since the end of last season when he completely tore through both levels of A ball, and been all about Kyle Schwarber, and I love his bat. I would like to see some more time in the minor leagues for him. I like to see guys get some exposure to AAA and face different kind of pitching there than they're used to seeing in Double A. I think it's an underrated jump for hitters to have to make. There's, you're facing a lot more guys with major league experience, especially once you get into the bullpens and in Double A, you're mostly facing a bunch of non-prospects or guys who throw hard and don't know where it's going. Whereas in AAA, you're facing a lot of guys who are on that the taxi squad between shuttling up and down between the big leagues and AAA. So the difference in pitching he would face there, I think, would be important for his development. But I think certainly, by this point next year, his bat's going to be ready. It's just defensively, it's a tough call to make, especially for them. If they had, if they had a more obvious opening for him, I do think he could play left field. I wouldn't want to just throw him out there without any, without any seasoning, without any experience out there, without some more exposure to playing the outfield a little bit in the minor leagues before you want to put him out there. I do think he could be a playable left fielder, but it's going to be a tough decision for them to make, because I think the bat is really going to force the issue for him pretty soon.
So the last guy I think we should touch on before we call it a podcast is Steven Matz. And on my trip, I drove the 2 hours from Chattanooga to Nashville to check out Steve Matz against Barry Zito in a Back to the Future sort of matchup. Zito won that day. He ate shutout innings against Las Vegas. And the curious thing with Matz was right now they have him on a pitch count for his last two starts of about 80 pitches. So after five innings, he was done. And not knowing about the pitch count beforehand, I thought, oh goodness, is he hurt? Frankly, fortunately he's not. But they're saving his bullets, and there's a story on BA right now about that. They're saving him for sometime this year, could be relatively soon, could be like Severino near the All-Star break, but there's a very good chance you'll see Steven Matz in Queens this year. And he's another guy, just to add to their list of their pile of pitchers. He's a lefty with three potential plus pitches and a mid-90s to 97-mile-an-hour fastball, a hammer of a curveball, and a changeup that you'll get plenty of swings and misses on. He's almost there, and if you add him to a rotation that includes, at some point, Harvey, DeGrom, Wheeler, Syndergaard, I'm sure I'm missing somebody.
Dude, Bartolo Colon.
Yes, Bartolo Colon. Yes, the greatest, our greatest treasure, Bartolo Colon. Make a six-man with those three guys. You're going to have a hard time getting hits against the Mets.
Well, I think if he was in almost any other organization, I think he'd be in the big leagues right now.
I think that's fair to say. He's close. He's real, real close is all I can say. Even though that outing I saw wasn't his best, he was, like I said, 80 pitches. He was up in the zone a bit, and he was rushing through his delivery. He even said as much afterward. But you look at the rest of his season, and you see that he just carves a lot. I asked one of the charting pitchers what to expect from him that day, and he said, just a lot of strikeouts, dude, a lot of strikeouts. And he was wrong. I only got two. But previously this year, he would have been right.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I've always liked Syndergaard over Matz. I don't know who you would take it. To me, I like Syndergaard's. I think Syndergaard has a better track record of durability. That to me is a concern with Matz. And you know, I've always liked Syndergaard's breaking ball better than Matz's. But that was kind of the question mark on Matz in the past. But just watching the video that you took and from what you saw of Matz's breaking ball, it seemed like that was a pretty good pitch for him the other day.
Actually, that it is a pretty good pitch for him. It's a very good pitch for him.
Yeah.
That particular one was probably the best all day.
Okay.
But that's, I think, is the other ones are the outliers. And I'm sure a lot of mathematicians will yell at me and say, that's not true. But that one, I think, is more close to the breaking ball you'll see from him at his best. It's going to be a really fine rotation. And if you read the quotes from Frank Viola in that piece, you'll see he's very excited about the future there in New York and the pitchers he's able to help send from Vegas to the Mets. Now, if they can only get a hitter. Conforto, your time is coming.
Yeah, I love Michael Conforto. Everything you want to see in a good hitter, he does.
Yeah, even if he did go to the wrong school in Oregon. And with that, I think we're at an hour and 3 minutes here now. So I think it's probably time to wrap this puppy up. I think Ben's got July 2nd stuff to work on. I've got a bearing down piece to write and videos to make for the 500. So Ben Badler, anything else you want to say before we leave?
No, that's all.
All right. For Ben Badler, this is Josh Norris. Thank you guys for listening to another Baseball America podcast.